It says, only be strong. Verse 7 says, only be strong and very courageous. Be very careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left so that you may have success wherever you go. Now, in the NASB, in most translations of the Bible, it says, be strong and courageous. But there's a Hebrew version of the Bible that translates directly from the Hebrew word, where the word strong is the word courageous is actually resolute. And the word resolute is actually a very strong word. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's a more accurate word to use. Because to be strong and to be courageous is to make decisions for God. But to be resolute for God is a very different thing. Now, the girls have all heard this because I've talked about this in Bible study quite a few times. And so that's why I want to talk about resolute choice. You see, when you're resolute about something, all right, okay, then, well, resolute about the fact you want to sit on my Bible. When you're resolute about something, it means that you have made up your mind. Now, how many of you have a chance, an opportunity in your life where you've been really resolute about something? I want to do this. And no matter what anybody says to you, no matter what anybody does for you, you decide, this is what I'm going to do. And it can be good or bad. Have any of you experienced that? But you have just decided, this is what I'm going to do. And I don't want to do anything else. Does anybody not have an opportunity to feel like that? I'm sure we all have, right? We all have a time in our life when we were really resolute about something. It's like, you know, for me, I'm a pretty stubborn person, and anybody who knows me will tell you that's true. And that's when I make up my mind I want to do something, I will do it. It will somehow get done, right? And my husband can attest to that over the many years about how he will maneuver around my stubbornness. Right? So for me to give in to something is quite challenging. So when I saw the word resolute, it really resonated with me, because to be resolute is almost to be stubborn in your choice. That means I want this, and I want this no matter what. Now the problem with that is sometimes we can be resolute towards the wrong thing, right? But today we're going to talk about being resolute in our choice towards God. So I want you to read that statement with me. I'll read it out loud. You can read it in your heart out loud if you want. It says, your salvation is your resolution, right? Your decision or determination that is adamant, uncompromising, persistent, and courageous to confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who died on the cross for your sins, is now your Lord, the owner and possessor of your life, and to believe in your heart that he is not dead, but risen from the dead, alive, living in your heart, hearing you, loving you, and because of that, you are now made right with him. Romans 10:9, it says, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. Right? You have to do two things. You have to confess with your mouth, and then you have to believe in your heart. For it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God, and it is by confessing with your mouth that you are saved. As the scriptures tell us, anyone who trusts in him will never be disgraced. So a lot of times, many of us, when we got saved in church, we put up our hands and we said a prayer with somebody, right? And then sometimes the church will tell you, you should give a testimony so you confess with your heart, with your mouth. But that's not it, right? That's not it at all. You see, to being resolute is not a one-day choice. You know when I became resolute in my faith? It was this morning. It was Monday morning. It was Tuesday morning. It was Wednesday morning. It was Thursday morning. Every day is a new day in God. If you don't wake up every morning and make that choice, I'm going to follow God today, you are not going to follow God. Your resolution with God has to start over every day. You have to make that decision every day, because guess what? You're going against the flow in this world. And how many of you have ever, like, when I was really young, I almost drowned in the ocean. Has anybody ever experienced that before? Where you're going against the current, right? If you give up, or if you don't fight it, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get dragged away. It's inevitable. If you don't make a choice for God every single day, your salvation, Philippians 2:12, it says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. why does that scripture even exist if we're not supposed to work at it? You see, the work of your salvation is done. You don't have to do anything to work for your salvation anymore. That is done. It was done on the cross. Jesus did it for you. But your acceptance of your salvation is your choice. If you don't accept and work at it and claim it and live it every single day, you're not going to walk in it. You see, you either choose God or you don't. It's really black and white. On Friday night when we did Bible study, Sally said something. She said, it's black and white. I'm like, yes, it is. With God, it's black and white. You can't have your idols and God. Let's define idol for a minute. Anything that takes your attention and your decisions away from God is your idol. Anything. It can be your spouse. It can be your job. It can be your bank account. It can be your child. Anything that takes your attention away from God. It can be the love of your life. Anything that takes your attention away from God is an idol. Do you know what happens to idols? They get destroyed. And then you get destroyed in the midst. I'm going to read that again. Your salvation is your resolution. You have to decide to walk your salvation. Your decision or determination that is adamant, you make that choice. This is my choice for God. It's work. You know, you may never have heard this before, because people have always told you the grace of God is free. It is amen and 100%. The grace of God is always free. The grace of God is free. But your choice to accept that grace is your choice. You know, I've never seen anybody lose weight sitting on the couch. Or anyone get up and run a marathon after sleeping their whole life away. You have to train to be able to do anything in life. You don't become successful in your job by not learning. You can't graduate from college if you don't study. Right? You can't even cook a meal unless you prepare something. Right? You can't even get dressed in the morning unless you get out of bed and put something on. Everything takes effort. You guys get where I'm going, right? Okay. So it's your determination is uncompromising, it's persistent, and it's courageous. Be bold to make that decision for God every day. This world is not going to help you. Your job is not going to help you get closer to God. Your friends are not going to help you get closer to God. The things that you hold on to in life so tight, the people you think who love you, they're not going to help you get closer to God. It's your choice. When you die one day, and you stand before God, there is nobody else beside. Do you know who's going to be standing right next to you? It's not your spouse. It's not your pastor. It's Jesus Christ. Get to know him. Understand him. You persistent. Be courageous in making those choices for God. He's the Son of God. He died on the cross for your sins, and he is now your Lord. Is he your Lord? You see, if Jesus Christ is not the Lord of your life, then you know who the Lord of your life is? It's Satan. If you don't call Jesus your master, you're calling Satan your master. And Satan is a deceiver. He is a liar. I was talking to a friend this week, and he was telling me, he said, Satan is a deceiver. I said, yeah. He said, I've never seen how awful deceit is until I'm seeing what's happening, because he has a family member who is being very deceived right now. And he said, I can't believe how deceived this person is, that they can't, you put the truth in front of their face and they still wouldn't know it. You know, can I share about mom? My mother-in-law had an online relationship with someone, and it was a scam. He was trying to get money out of her. And so Admin and all his siblings got together, and they researched and they found out this man was a scam. Now, of course, it was not their intention to disprove he was a scam. They wanted to make sure their mom was okay. But Admin showed his mother evidence, actual evidence, and she still couldn't see it. You see, deceit is Satan's and is one tool that he will use to make you do what he wants you to do. You look like a fool when you're being deceived because you don't believe in God. If Jesus is not Lord of your life, Satan is. There is no in-between. It's black and white. So decide today. You decide, right? You decide. You can't. It's never about, I have no choice. Oh, no, no. You always have a choice. You always have a choice. When you are bound up, you always have a choice to come free. There's never a time in life you don't have a choice. I want to go to the book of Daniel today. Okay, and we're going to read from Daniel chapter 1. The book of Daniel, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were really great examples of men of God who chose and were resolute in their faith for God. And as we read through Daniel, we're going to read through the first three chapters of Daniel. You will find similarity to them in your life. You will see how what Daniel, Azariah, Hananiah, Mishael went through is so similar to what your life is. I'll go ahead and read from chapter 1, verse 1. Is everyone there? In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, this is one of the last kings of Israel, he gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand along with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. So he took God, he took all the vessels of God and brought them into an idol's temple. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, youth in whom no defect, youth in whom was no defect, who were good looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom. Endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered him to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the official assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now, I want to stop right there. So the first thing is Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah had resolved to live for God. So when they were brought into Nebuchadnezzar's when they were selected by Nebuchadnezzar, it's because they were good-looking, they were smart, they were young, they were very able. Those are the kind of people he asked for, right? And so when they were brought into, Nebuchadnezzar was not a believer, right? He worshipped idols. He was an idol worshiper from the beginning to the end. He selected smart men from Israel because he wanted to train them up to serve him, right? Not for the benefit of anybody else, but for his own benefit. Now, when Daniel came in, he came in with his beliefs. So he went to serve an ungodly man with his beliefs, but he was resolute in what he did and what he knew. You know, Daniel is a great chapter to study for those of us who are working in a secular environment. The question always comes up, how do I survive and succeed in secular workplace, right, as a Christian? Read Daniel. Watch the life of Daniel. Daniel never wavered. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. He didn't want to conform to the culture or maybe even the fellowship of the heathen nation that they were part of, right? They were forced to be part of a nation that was not of God, and he didn't want to conform to that culture. So he asked, he said, can I please be excused? I don't want to eat what the king eats. Now, there's many theories about that, right? But one theory we know is that heathen beliefs offered their food to idols. And they also ate food that was not in the Jewish culture. So maybe they ate pork and things like that. So because of that, he didn't want to be put in a position where he would have to disobey his God and what his beliefs were. So he asked to be excused. Now, here's the amazing thing. I'm gonna put this. Let's put this in an environment that we're in right now. Now, when I first started working, networking was, and still it today, right? Networking is a huge thing. Those of us who work, we understand. It's a huge thing. And a lot of times networking doesn't always happen in very edifying places. Like when I first started working, it was very, my industry was very male oriented. So networking happened at the bar in the evening. I don't drink. I don't want to go out at night. I'm married. I want to go home and be with my husband. Right? So when people went out to network, guess who wasn't there? Me. I never signed up for like happy hours. Right? Never, ever. It hurt. I thought it hurt my career, but in actuality, it never did. That's just one example, right? It's like, what other examples? I'm sure you can think of many other examples where things happen in the workplace that are not necessarily helping you grow in God or in accordance to your belief system with God, right? As a Christian. Now, I'm going to keep reading. Now, God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And the commander of the officials said to Daniel, I am afraid of my Lord, the king who appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. But Daniel said to the overseer, whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who are eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their appearance seemed better, and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and wine that they were to drink and kept giving them vegetables. And as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions. Oh, sorry. Can we go to the next slide? Yeah. Yeah. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. So God, and then one more slide down. So because they chose to be set aside, God also continued to bless them with unusual aptitude for understanding. I always tell people this. When people tell me they're struggling at work, I tell them, pray. And I remember somebody telling me, why would I pray about my job? What does God know about my job? I want to tell, I've been had so many testimonies about work. And I was just sharing with Mark this morning. I started a new job this week, and they assigned me to an area I have no, honestly, when they told me what the area was, it's called entity governance. I said, okay. And then in my head, I'm like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? What does that look like? And he said, I need you to lead up this thing. I want you to reorganize it, and I want you to come up with a new... I'm like, okay. I don't even know what it is. I don't even know what it looks like. It's something... I'm a finance person. I've been a finance person all my life, but I don't know what that means. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what the expectations are. So I started to pray about it. I have so many testimonies about things where people have given me projects or things to work on. I have no clue what I'm working on, and I pray about it. And when I pray about it, God gives me ideas. And there was one time I had to speak on something. Somebody gave me a topic to speak on, and I had no clue. So I prayed about it. I went to sleep that night. I dreamt a presentation. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I wrote out my entire presentation, and I went back to sleep. The next morning, I woke up. I looked at that presentation, and I went online, and I researched it. And every single thing that I had written down was points of what I found. I kid you not. I can't even explain how that happened. God knows everything. If you struggle with work, if you struggle with school, if you struggle just studying something and you don't know how to understand it, pray. God gave these four men an unusual aptitude and understanding for every aspect of literature and wisdom. He understands computer science. He understands accounting. He understands philosophy. He understands psychology. He wrote it. He understands biology. He understands how your managers think and work. He understands work politics. There is nothing that God doesn't understand. There's nothing you cannot pray about, right? When the training period ordered by the king was completed, the chief of staff brought all the young men to King Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked to them, and no one impressed him as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, so they entered into the royal service. These men had withheld themselves from the special treatment of the king to honor their God, and God blessed them. Whenever the king consulted them in any matter requiring wisdom and balanced judgment, he found them 10 times more capable than any of the magicians and enchanters in his entire kingdom. Okay, I'm going to give another very good example, but how many of you guys have watched the movie Limitless? It's not a good example, I know. But in the movie Limitless, there is a pill called the NCT pill, and we always kid about it at home because we're like, I wish I had the NCT pill, because what it does is it makes your brain work at like 100% capacity, and we all don't use 100% of our brain. When I read the scripture today, I'm like, oh, NCT in the Bible. God gives us the capacity and the capability to do 10 times more. He gave them that capacity and capability to know 10 times more than everybody else around them. And guess what? They were all learning the same thing. Where did that extra wisdom come from? That's the promise of God. Being resolute in our faith is not just to be, not just to look good. You know, everything you know about Christianity that is about appearing to look good, throw it out the window. Because looking good is your biggest enemy. You see, if you are godly from the inside, your outside is naturally looking good. Does that make sense? But if you focus on looking good on the outside, your inside, you're a whitewashed tomb. That's what Jesus called the Pharisees. You know what a whitewashed tomb is? Tombs are pretty, like, dreary, right? They hold dead bodies. So a whitewashed tomb is a tomb that's, like, cleared up and made to look really good, but on the inside, you're dead. When we resolve to follow God, the inside of us becomes alive, and then you can't but help to be alive on the outside. So they were 10 times more capable. Now, they had all been given all these capabilities, but Daniel was also given the capability of being able to interpret dreams. So let's go to Daniel chapter 2. I'm going to skip down for the sake of time. I'm going to skip down through, I'm going to read Daniel chapter 2, 1 through 4 first. So one night during the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had such disturbing dreams he couldn't sleep. So he called in all his magicians and enchanters and sorcerers and astrologers, and he demanded that they tell him what he had dreamed. As they stood before the king, he said, "I have had a dream that deeply troubles me, and I must know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic, "Long live the king, tell us the dream, and we will tell you what it means." Then the king's demand, verse 5. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "The command for me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you'll be torn limb from limb and your houses will be made of rubbish heap." He really wanted to know what it meant, right? "But if you declare the dream and its interpretation, you will receive from me gifts and a reward and great honor. Therefore, declare to me the dream and its interpretation." So they answered a second time and said, "Let the king tell the dream to his servants and we will declare the interpretation." The king answered and said, "I know for certain that you are bargaining for time, inasmuch as you have seen that the command from me is firm, that you do not make the dream known to me, that if you do not make the dream known to me, there's only one decree for you. For you have agreed whether to speak lying and corrupt words before me until the situation is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream that I may know that you can declare to me its interpretation." So the Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There is not a man on earth who could declare the matter for the king inasmuch as no great king or ruler has ever asked anything like this of any magician, conjurer, or Chaldean. Moreover, the thing which the king demands is difficult, and there is no one else who could declare it to the king except God, whose dwelling place is not with mortal flesh." So they admitted, they're like, "What you're asking for is impossible. We can't tell you what this is. Only God, the gods could," well, their interpretation of God, "only the gods could tell you what it is," right? So going to skip down to... I'm going to read verse 12. Because of this, the king became indignant and very furious and gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they looked for Daniel and his friends to kill them. Then Daniel replied with discretion and discernment to Arioch, the captain of the king's bodyguard, who had gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered to Arioch, the king's commander, "For what reason is the decree from the king so urgent?" Then Arioch informed Daniel about the matter. So Daniel went in and requested of the king that he would give him time in order that he might declare the interpretation of the king. Then Daniel did what was right. Verse 17. Daniel went to his house and informed his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah about the matter in order that they might request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his friends might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. You know what this was? This was a test, right? Even though Daniel, Mishael, Azariah, and Hananiah had obeyed God every step of the way, now they were faced with an opportunity where they could be killed, right? Now, God had blessed them today, but now they were facing another test. Do you face tests in your life? Right? Sometimes we follow God and we expect this to just be smooth sailing. I'm following God, so that means God's protecting me. That means nothing's going to happen to me. That's a lie. You will face tests every day. But in their test, instead of panicking and doing probably what everybody else was doing, they went back home and they sought God. God, what do we have to do in this time? Verse 19, then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. When we go to God, it's really simple. He just answers us. And Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. It is he who changes the times and the epoch. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To thee, O God, my fathers, I give thanks and praise. For you have given me wisdom and power, even you have made known to me what we requested of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter." So then Daniel went into Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and spoke to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me into the king's presence, and I will declare the interpretation to the king." He knew. God had shown him. What nobody else could figure out, God had shown Daniel. You know, there are things in your life today that you're wondering, where am I going to get this question answered? You know, how idols are formed in our lives is sometimes we chase after things that we don't have control over, and then we put all our focus in that little idol. Right? It is a shortcut. An idol is something that gives you temporary satisfaction. Because it's control, right? When I have to trust God, I'm out of control. But when I have an idol in my hand or something that I'm pursuing that I can see or I can touch, right? Then because of that, it's like this can be something that I can put my hope in. Because if this little thing responds to me in any way, it means I'm doing something right. But with God, I pray, and then I don't know what he's doing sometimes. Because with God, sometimes we have to wait. You know that four-letter word that nobody likes? Wait. None of us like that word. Right? You know, my son, right? My son has a really hard time with wait. Like, I'll say wait, and he'll be like, 1 second later, no. Right? 2 seconds later, no, no. Wait is a hard word. But you see, things have to happen in God's time, not in your time. So because of that, when Daniel went to Arioch, he was ready. He said, "God has already shown me this. So then take me to the king's presence and I'll declare the interpretation to the king." So verse 25, Arioch hurriedly brought Daniel into the king's presence and spoke to him as follows, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can make the interpretation known to the king." The king answered to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered before the king, "As for the mystery about which the king has inquired, neither wise men, conjurers, magicians, nor diviners are able to declare it to the king. However, there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. This was your dream, and the visions in your mind while on your bed. As for you, O king, while on your bed, your thoughts turn to what would take place in the future, and he who reveals mysteries has made known to you what will take place. God actually showed Nebuchadnezzar what was going to happen. He just didn't know it because he didn't know God. Right? But as for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king, that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. It was not for Daniel's glory at all. So he told him his dream. He said, you, O king, were looking, and behold, there was a single great statue. That statue, which was large and of extraordinary splendor, was standing in front of you, and its appearance was awesome. The head of that statue was made of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly clay. And you continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and gold were crushed all at the same time and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So there was this great statue, right? And it was great and splendorous. And suddenly the stone came out of nowhere that no one had cut. And the stone struck the statue and crushed it. It was gone, like crushed down to the point of dust and just flew away, right? This was the dream. Now we shall tell its interpretation before the king. It says, you, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them into your hands, and has caused you to rule over them. You are the head of gold. Right? After you, there will arise another kingdom inferior to you, and then a third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. There will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, in as much as iron crushes and shatters things. So like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces. In that you saw the feet and toes, partly of polished clay and partly of iron, it will be a divided kingdom. But it will have in it the toughness of iron, in as much as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong, and part of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of man, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. He was speaking of future kingdoms that were to come, kingdoms that were going to be mixed and melded, not meant to be together, but it would be mixed and melded because that's what they thought would make them stronger. So, and in those days, in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put to an end all these kingdoms, and it will itself endure forever. Inasmuch as you saw that with a stone cut off the mountain without hands, that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God is made known to the king that what will take place in the future. So the dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy. So the interpretation was, you're going to lose everything. Your kingdom right now that is of gold, you are the head of gold, you are going to lose everything. You will have no legacy. You will have nothing to leave. Your kingdom as you have built right now, your wealth and everything that you're holding on to will all be gone. That was the interpretation of the dream. Nebuchadnezzar was one of the greatest kings. You go back and read through the biblical history. He was one of the greatest kings. He ruled over everything. And because of that, he always wanted people to worship him. He was idol worshiper to the core, right? Now, and God was telling him, you are going to lose everything. Now, because of that, Nebuchadnezzar saw the power of God in Daniel. And in verse 47, he said, surely your God is a God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery. Now remember this, Daniel's witness was the testimony to Nebuchadnezzar of how great God is. You see how important that was? Because Daniel chose to live right. His life was the physical witness to Nebuchadnezzar of God. Okay, remember that. I'm going to go down to Daniel chapter 3. Now Nebuchadnezzar, after this dream and after Daniel's interpretation, went back to his usual ways. So what did he go and do? He went and made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and the width was 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plains of Dura in the province of Babylon. And his decree was, every time... Verse 4, then the herald loudly proclaimed, to you the command is given, O people, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. He was an idol worshiper, and he wanted everybody around him to worship him. Right? So anytime they heard the music, everybody bow down and worship the idol. Now, don't forget Daniel, Hananiah. I always forget their name. Mishael. Yes, Mishael and Azariah. They have sworn to worship no other god but their god. So, verse 6, it says, whoever does not fall down and worship, they shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. Now, so in verse 12, they came up and they say, verse 10, it says, you issued, this is troublemakers, right? They go to Nebuchadnezzar and says, you issued a decree requiring all the people to bow down and worship the gold statue when they hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, pipes, and other musical instruments. And that decree also states that those who refuse to obey, they must be thrown into a burning furnace. So they're like, let me tell you who's not doing this, right? So there are some Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who you put in charge of the province of Babylon. They pay no attention to you, your majesty. They refuse to serve your gods and do not worship the golden statue you set up. So Nebuchadnezzar, because he's an idol worshiper and he's so full of himself, he got mad. He's like, what do you mean they're not following me? So he flew into a rage and ordered that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him. When they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or to worship the gold statue I've set up? I will give you one more chance. Bow down and worship the statue I've made when you hear the sound of the instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then what god will be able to rescue you from my power? See, he was so sure. This is Satan. Satan is so sure he has complete control over your life. So he threatens your life every day. You do what I ask you to do or else. You know what the concept of the fear of loss is? Any of you have taken sales or even psychology. The fear of loss is like when somebody tries to tell you something and they make you feel like if you don't do this, you're going to lose. Car salesman. I hate car salesman because I don't like to buy cars because of this. Because when you go there, they're like, we have a deal for you, but it's only today. The minute somebody tells me it's only for today, I'll leave. Because I'm like, I don't believe that. That's what Satan does. You do this or else. You do this or you'll be alone forever. You do this or you'll have no money. You do this or you'll never be smarter. Nobody will love you. You do this or you'll be hated for the rest of your life. That's what he did. And this is exactly what he was doing. He said, you bow down and worship me. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to throw you into a blazing furnace of fire. Put yourself in their shoes. Fire is hot. If you fall in fire, you die. But I love their response. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. We don't need to tell you or justify to you why we're doing what we're doing. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve, he's able to save us. When you're faced with a situation where somebody tells you, or when that deception is speaking into your heart, if you don't do this, you'll be alone forever. If you don't do this, you will lose everything. If you don't do this, are you able to step back and say, but the God whom I serve is able to save me even from this. The God whom I serve will never let me be alone. The God whom I serve will never let me be without. You guys following me? The God whom I serve will never abandon me. Never abandon me. Do you have that conviction upon our hearts? The God whom I serve creates no fear in my life. I never have the fear of loss. I never have the fear of being alone. Because the God whom I serve, I know who he is. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they knew. They're like, go ahead. Throw me in the fire. The God whom I serve, I don't know how. They knew he would not let them die. But, for your majesty, but even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you've set up. When you want to walk away from your idol, you have to look your idol straight in the face and say, I will never serve you. I will never subject myself to you, no matter what, because I believe what my God can do is far greater than what you can do for me. Walking away from idols is difficult. You have to break your idol. You have to understand that your idol is under your control. Idols are made with human hands. God is not. When you worship something above from God, that is your idol. You know, how do you identify an idol? How much time do you spend doing something? If you look at things in your life that are taking up more time than you would ever consider spending with God, idol identified. Right? That is your idol. In order to walk away from your idol, you have to understand one thing. You've got to be able to look your idol in the face and understand, this thing will never satisfy me. And if I'm truly going to follow God, then no matter I live or die, I will never again worship this thing. You have to walk away from it. So let's go to verse 18. Verse 19, sorry. Then Daniel chapter 3, 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar, he was mad. He was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it usually heated. He wanted these boys to burn, right? He wanted them to feel it. And he commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire. Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew these men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in haste. See, the men who threw him in burnt up, but they fell inside, not burnt at all. Okay? Was it not 3 men we cast bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said to the king, certainly, O king. And he answered, look, I see 4 men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire. He responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God. Second witness. There's no way Nebuchadnezzar could have known the power of God without the witness of Daniel and the three boys. Second witness, Nebuchadnezzar saw who God was because of their witness in his life. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out out of the midst of the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their head singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them. Do you not know that what you are most afraid of cannot even touch you if you trust God? What is your greatest fear today? Is it the fear of losing something? Is it the fear of not gaining something? Is it the fear of losing out? What if I commit my life to God and I lose out on what this world has to offer? If that is your fear, do you know that God can protect you in such a way that you could not even potentially ever imagine? How do you explain physically people who threw these three men into the fire were burnt up and died, and yet these men were in the fire for a while, walking around, came out without even the smell of burn on them. That is not even scientifically explainable. How did that happen? Except for the fact that God protected them. There is nothing our God cannot do. This is not a story. This is a testimony of something that actually happened many years ago. So remember that. This is not somebody's fictional story that they made up so that we can make a movie out of it one day. This is an actual account of what happened to four men who chose to be godly and walk their lives right. This same God who protected Daniel, Hananiah, and Azariah can protect, Azariah, Mishael, and... Again, you guys know what I'm talking about. These three boys, right? The same God who protected them in the fire is the very same God who lives inside of you today. Do you understand the power that you possess inside of you? That's crazy. You know, how many Christians today, we walk so defeated because we feel like we can't. I can't. I can't. I hear that all the time. I can't. I can't walk away from my sin. I can't let go. I can't forget. I can't forgive. Me? You can't. But do you know who lives inside of you? You know, we literally have no more excuse. You know, I can't, I used to say I can't a lot. That was my best excuse, I can't. I'm too short, I'm too this, I'm too that. I didn't have the right upbringing. I didn't have the right exposure. Until God really challenged me one day. He says, if you say you can't, you can't. At the place where I work out, there's a thing on the wall that says, if you say you can't, you can't. And it's true. The minute you say you can't, you can't. Try it. But the minute you stop saying you can't and trust God, you can do anything. If you haven't made that step forward in God because of something you can't, then it's time to let go. Think about it. This actually happened, you guys. This happened, right? These three boys, they went through the fire and they came out and there was nothing on them. It's a miracle. If this was today, we'd be all over CNN. We're all over Team 5 Como News. How did that happen? It only happens because of God. That same God protects you today. That same God lives inside of us. When we have that understanding of the kind of God we serve, serving Him is not hard at all. Right? What is hard is our choice. Now, the resolution, what the four Hebrew boys did, Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, what they did was a testimony to Nebuchadnezzar. Do you not know? I don't know. I can't tell you how Nebuchadnezzar ended his life. But I'll tell you that because of their witness, Daniel chapter 4, verse 37. I can't tell you whether Nebuchadnezzar truly gave his life to God, but this is what he said. He said, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and glorify and honor the King of heaven. All his acts are just and true, and he is able to humble the proud. This is after Nebuchadnezzar lost everything. Sometimes you wonder, can God change the heart of those whose hearts are so hardened? Can God really change someone's heart? You know how God changes people's hearts? It's when we start walking right and become a witness in their life. When our lives reflect Christ, only then can they see who God really is. Only then can they come to know God. This is so important. Nebuchadnezzar, he was like, you know, if you read history about Nebuchadnezzar, he was an idol worshiper to the core. But he said, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and glorify and honor the King of heaven. It was because of what he saw. Let's go back to the rest of the first line. I don't think I have any more for this one. Second one, yeah. Your salvation is your resolution. You have to make a choice at some point. You see, you either commit to God or you're not committed at all. So be very clear. I think it's very clear. I do have one more slide, don't I? Can you go to the last slide? Sorry. Yeah.
Joshua 24:15 says, but if you refuse to serve the Lord, then choose today whom you will serve. Would you prefer the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates, or will it be the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live now? But as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. People always use the last line. But the truth is that you have to choose who you serve. You know, every Sunday you come to church, or Wednesday you come to Bible study, or Friday you come to Bible study, but have you chosen who you serve? Because if you don't serve God and serve God entirely, you see, every time you come here and you come to a Bible study, you come to church, this is all you're going to hear. Right? Because the thing is that this is what's going to determine your eternity. Now, you may hopefully come away from this feeling empowered, knowing that because I have God in me, I can do anything, and I can actually make the choices for Him. Or you might feel really convicted, right? Because you might feel like, oh, I haven't been walking right. Doesn't matter how you feel, make a choice. Because that's the only way you're going to feel the way you need to feel. Make a choice. You have to choose. If you don't choose to serve God, then be very clear you are serving Satan. If you are not choosing to serve God, then be very clear that when you are serving Satan, understand your destiny. Right? That's what we want to be really clear about. If you understand your destiny, then you can live according to your destiny. But if you understand your destiny is not with God right now, then make a choice for Him to live. If you make a choice for God, then be understand that your choice, we go back to the first slide. Your choice or determination needs to be adamant, right? It needs to be uncompromising, and it needs to be persistent, and it needs to be courageous. You need to be able to confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is the Son of God who died on the cross for your sins, and He is now your Lord. That is your confession. That is your choice. I can't make that choice for you. I can be here to support you. We can all be here to support one another. But until we actually make that choice, nothing's going to happen. Until you resolve in your heart, your life will not change. Right? Second Peter chapter 3, verse 9. Actually, before that, let's go to Revelations 3:15-17. Okay, Revelation 3:15-17, it says, I know all the things you do, that you are neither hot nor cold. God, anything that you're doing, whatever you're hiding in your life, please understand, even though others don't see it, God sees it. Right? When we compromise, even though people around us may think we're still perfect, God knows, right? So know that. I wish that you were one or the other, but since you are like lukewarm water, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. You say, I am rich, I have everything I want, I don't need a thing, and you don't realize that you are wretched, miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. No, don't ever be fooled for a second that nobody knows. Because even though people around you may not know everything, God knows. And the only person you need to please is please don't please people around you. Right? You can never please everybody 100%. It's exhausting. If you're trying your whole life to be pleasing to the people around you, just stop it, because it'll kill you. You'll get really tired really fast. But when you try to please God and you understand the only thing you need to do is please God, it becomes a lot clearer. You see, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9, it says, the Lord isn't really being slow about His promise, as some people think. He is being patient for your sake. Do you not know? God, He loves you so much. Have any of you ever been betrayed before? When you're betrayed or when somebody hurts you, what's the first thing you want to do? Do you want to hang out with that person some more? No, the last thing you want to do is see that person, right? Usually that person gets deleted off your phone list. Like, I'm done. I'm not calling this person anymore. Right? We betray God every time we don't choose Him. Every time we don't make a choice for Him, that's our betrayal of God. He doesn't delete us off His phone list. Instead, 2 Peter 3:9, that's your promise. He said, He's being patient for our sake. He doesn't want anyone to be destroyed, but He wants everyone to repent. He wants to give everyone an opportunity to come back to Him. So He will patiently wait. So even though your promises have not been fulfilled, please understand there is an entire lifetime. Right? You're not dead yet. On the inside, but you're not dead on the outside. You're not dead physically. You are still on this earth. Which means you always have an opportunity to come back to God and walk with Him. Or if you've never walked with God, you have an opportunity to walk with God. Don't pass up that opportunity because you're really holding on to your idols. Right? Take your idols seriously. Identify your idols. Recognize that you made that idol. God didn't put that idol in your life. Call your idol what it is. It's an idol. It's taking me away from God. And then destroy your idol. Get it out of your life. It is not giving you life. It is not helping you. It is not sustaining you. If this is my idol, you guys all know me. If I make this my idol and I worship this every day, what are you going to think of me? Like literally this cup of pens. If I mold my life around this cup, literally, you all know me. What are you going to think of me? Lost her mind. She's gone crazy. Can she see it's just a cup of pens? This is my salvation. I'm going to put my whole life in this. I'm going to invest all my money in this thing. Everything I have, I'm going to give up my husband, my child, my house, my job. Just for this. I'm going to put everything on the line just for this. Somebody say something. That's not going to help me. Are you going to stay quiet? What would you tell me? No, don't kid. Right? What would you tell me? Like, really, if I told you, this is my idol, what would you tell me? Wake up. Huh? What? I'm lost. But I love my pens.
And I'll say they're better pens out
there. But look at this one. It's got bite marks on it. It's crazy, right? That's what it looks like when you worship an idol.
Or you should know the maker of pens.
You know? That's a great concept, but I can touch these pens. I can't touch the maker of pens. And I can control these pens. That is literally what it looks like when you worship idols. To the people around you, you look crazy. But to you, that is your whole life. You have to get it out of the way and destroy it in order for you to know God in your life. Identify your idols. Call them out. Hey, this is an idol. You know, I was sharing with the girls on Friday. I work a lot. Like, some of you know, I work a lot of hours. And like a couple of weeks ago, I was sitting down and I had been working. I started work at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I came home at 6:30, cooked dinner, spent time with Evan and Jane for a couple of hours, and they went to sleep. And then I was up till like 2 a.m. working again. And right about 2 a.m., I was just like, why am I doing this? Like, literally my job, nobody's life depends on it. Like, nobody dies if I don't get things done. You know, like, right? I'm an accountant. Come on. Nobody dies. There's no life on the line. Why am I working so hard? And I prayed, I'm like, God, if my job is an idol, take it out, take it away. But teach me to be a faithful servant. That's all I wanted. I want to glorify you in my job. Daniel, the book of Daniel, the first three chapters was real comfort to me because of that. Because Daniel lived for God. So in everything he did, whether it be in work or at home or wherever, it was to glorify God. And that's my desire and my goal, is that when I'm at work, I want to glorify God. I've seen that happen because people come into my office and they've asked for prayer many times. They're like, I know you're a Christian. Can you pray for me? My friend's son is going through surgery today. Can you pray for me? Anyway, to me, that makes my day, right? I'm like, I can get things done and get praise all over, but when somebody recognizes that I'm a believer and they ask me to pray for them and I can have fellowship with another believer, that means more than anything else. Identify your idols. Right. Don't replace one idol with another one. Right. When you get rid of your idol, you will be able to find God. But if you don't identify what your idol is, you're going to keep worshiping it. What is it? It can, maybe it's not even a thing. Maybe it's just the feeling of being wanted, the feeling of being needed. Right? That's an idol too, because then you don't rely on God. You don't trust God. What's your idol? What can you let go of today? Your salvation is your resolution. You have to decide, right? You have to decide. You have to make that choice. You have to be adamant, uncompromising, persistent, and courageous. You have to confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is the Lord of your life. Who's your master? Who's your Lord? If you're a master of your own life, guess what? It's not you, it's Satan. Right? I am not my own person. If I am my own person, then I am being driven by Satan. If I'm not being driven by God, be very clear about this. If you are not being driven by God, you are being driven by Satan. There is no in-between. You have no control. You think you have control, but you don't. That's the worst thing, right? And to believe in your heart that he is not dead, but he is risen from the dead, alive and living in your heart. He hears you. He loves you. And because of that, you are made right with him. When you believe in your heart that Jesus Christ rose from the dead, that's what makes you righteous. Because then you know you're serving a living God. Amen. Amen. I want to take a little bit of time today to give you some time to pray. Because if you have not been walking right with God, if you have been compromising and following idols in your life, this is not a time for condemnation. Right? If you feel bad in your heart, and if it's not conviction, that's called condemnation. When you feel bad in your heart after listening to a message or reading the Bible, and you respond by walking away from God, then you're giving in to Satan. But when you feel bad in your heart and you're starting to feel that pressure on your chest and you need to know, you need to do something, you need to pray. The only judgment you need to worry about is the judgment of God, not the judgment of people. You need to pray and just give that up. Identify your idols and say, Lord, this is my idol. Will you take it away? I lay it down at your feet. I destroy this idol. But the most important thing you have to do is you have to walk away from it. So remember, when you make a resolution towards God, when does it happen? Like I shared with you guys, I resolved to follow God this morning. I also resolved to follow God Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Every single morning when I wake up, I make a decision that I'm going to follow God today. That no matter what happens, I will make a decision for